Blog Talk Radio.
Health Option Show with Richard Talk To Me Guy and Sherry Edwards. Good morning, Sherry.
Good morning, Richard. You know, Richard, I count you among my friends, although I have never seen you. your face. Won't let that be put out. I've never touched you.
Exactly.
Never talked in the same room. But I recently sent you a little questionnaire, I guess, about what you were afraid of in life in the United States and for the world. And I sent it out to several friends, and they came back that they said they were afraid of government retaliation, the IRS, global terrorism that's running amok worldwide, and the burden that's being placed on our children in terms of debt and destruction of our planet. So we are right in step with our guest today, Sherry S-H-E-R-R-Y, Peel Jackson, because she's going to answer at least two of these questions about the IRS and about our economy. I hope we can get all of that in, although most people are interested in how to stick it to the IRS because it's that time of year. She's going to strip away the mystique of the most feared government. Somebody has their mic open. I'm going to close that down because we're getting some feedback. Okay. Richard, do you want to make some announcements first?
If you can put up that picture I sent you, if you can find that on your desktop, the Super Bowl, if nobody's heard, there's a Super Bowl happening, and it's happening in California. And the picture that Sherry is showing is the picture of a police officer. As you see that picture, for those on WebEx, I'll get back to that announcement in just a second about explaining WebEx. So this is a San Francisco Police Department police officer on duty guarding an area of the Super Bowl. Now, mind you, he's not the actual Super Bowl that's happening. It's happening about an hour and 15 minutes south of San Francisco. So that's a whole separate area. This officer is actually on an area called Super Bowl City that has been set up in San Francisco. So he's not even at the actual Super Bowl. He is just guarding an area where thousands of, literally tens of thousands of people over this past week have been shopping and buying stuff and, you know, getting excited. This is a police officer. I know he looks like he just came back from Iraq, but this is a police officer with a seriously loaded clip of, I'm going to, in my opinion, guess that that is a fully automatic weapon. Did I mention like this is a police officer? This shocks me.
This looks to be three and a half feet long, this big gun, and there's a pair of scissors, and looks like he's ready for everything. Full gear, Kevlar suit. Wow.
His hand is resting on the grip right next to the trigger as if he is ready to, you know, and fully rigged with headset and communication mic on. Now, I don't know what the photographer of this is, Doug Kay, who's a photographer I follow on Instagram. That's why that picture has that odd frame around it. And he does great street photography, but this is somebody who lives in San Francisco, and he took this picture. I just thought it was like, wow. This is a guy guarding, you know, merchants.
This is not somebody put this up. This is a citizen who took this picture?
Yeah, this is a citizen that took this picture. This is a guy who does a lot of, he's a great photographer, but he lives in San Francisco and was wandering around and, you know, posted this picture this morning.
People are reporting they're not seeing my screen, but according to WebEx, my screen is up. We are simultaneously broadcasting through Blog Talk Radio, the audio portion, and then I'm doing the video portion over here on Blog Talk Radio, or WebEx, you can get to that by going to soundhealthoptions.com and go to the radio page and go to Blog Talk Radio, and you should be able to see this. We have a new thing that we just started doing on Blog Talk Radio. We record this video as we're doing it, and so the last show that we did, the one about Are You Ready to Die, I went over and put the video up, so if you want to watch it from there. Other people are reporting that they're seeing the pictures. See who said. So, Jeff, other people are reporting that they can see the screen. Wow, Richard, that's incredible.
Yeah, it was really, I mean, it's a great photograph. He titled the photograph Don't Run with Scissors, because if you're listening at Blog Talk Radio, the part that people don't know is that he has these very, you know, bright orange-handled scissors in his belt. So Doug is humorously labeling it, you know, Don't Run with Scissors. He isn't making, I'm making the editorial about it. He is not. It's just a great photograph.
We have one person who has a question or comment from our audience. We have audience at both Blog Talk and WebEx. Joan, I'm opening your mic. You have your hand up. Did you have a comment or question? Joan, you're on the air. Well, it doesn't look like she has a mic, so I'm going to mute her back. For those of you who want to make a comment or ask our guest questions, you can go down to the lower left-hand corner, I believe, of your participants list, and you can raise and lower your hand there. There's a lot of chats coming in about your picture, Richard. So, any other announcements? That's pretty horrid. No, we had
no.
One
I thought
lady
that in, I thought that was enough.
We had one lady in her 60s. That commented when I asked her about what she feared. And she said, I used to read about this in comic books and see it in sci-fi movies about these underground places where you had to keep and store your guns because there were people coming around every corner. And yes, it isn't happened so dramatically in the U.S., but there are certainly a lot of people dying around the world in the name of religion. I was just trying. Oh, okay, Joan, got it. Richard, other announcements that I would like to make is we are having a class, and we think this is an exciting class. We've also got some exciting research. But we are putting this up just in time for Valentine's Day. We've been doing for the last 6 months 2-day workshops that are absolutely free. And we are providing software with it. And for this next one coming up next week at the end of the week, it is Matters of the Heart. And we are going to give away software that deals with compatibility. Who you're compatible with, what kind of partner you would be, what your perfect mate might be, why your love life might be falling apart. We just think this is a fun thing. And so we invite you to sign up, and for those of you who are listening, if you could share this with your Facebook and let them know it's coming, I will put the link in the chat so everyone can have this. Actually, there are 4 or 5 softwares that they'll be getting, and we're doing this for many reasons. One, there's just so much work to do. People call and they're desperate, and they want us to see somebody at the Institute of Bioacoustic Biology where we're doing all this research. And when we can't see them, they turn around and call me all kinds of names, and I'm cold-hearted, and you know, there's only one of me to go around. So that's why we put all of these different classes together for people so that they can do it for themselves. So the Nano Voice is on our downloads, and that's a personality profiler. I was astounded at my compatibility printouts. There were things on there that I hadn't even told my husband, and today's our anniversary. We've been married 47 years, so that's
wow.
has a lot of secrets that came out, and things I hadn't even told him about what I wanted in a partner. I guess I wanted him to guess about it. But on downloads, also, there's a bonus software, and this is going to be taken down very, very shortly, and it's neuroplasticity, and it tells you what your brain needs to be at its optimal. And that's an absolutely free software, because we think we need it here in the U.S. at least, because our nutrition is so bad and there's so much stress. There's a textbook there, Bioacoustic Basics, that teaches you to do all of this. And the other one that we put up, especially in Richard's honor, is all of the radiation exposure, because he's right there on the northern coast of California, or the northwestern coast, I should say. I don't think there's a... I'm getting myself in trouble. I'll shut up. But Richard helped us put this software together and helped us test it. And there's been another great big surge. So if you're interested, you can see if you've been exposed. And on that site, there are charts that will tell you if you've been exposed, this is the kind of nutrition that you can imbibe, eat, whatever you want to call it. Take it by a pill, eat it in your food, take herbs, so that you can stay off this exposure to all these radioactive isotopes. So that's ready and waiting for you. Ah, that's a lot. Oh, we're doing research on the Zika virus and glyphosate right now. So if any of you are interested in that, you can tune into our other shows that are on Tuesday evening, Happy Hour, and Direction for Truth. And I have an incredible announcement about this Cruz Carson fiasco. We know who's really behind that and what really happened. So we're going to be announcing that and talking about it, sharing it with you on Tuesday on our Directions for Truth show that you can also look at under radio or and get to and join us and watch or listen. I think that's all of the announcements. Did I leave anything
else? I'd throw in a little footnote regarding the radiation software. It's come out that there may also be radiation leaking in Southern California at the methane, the Aliso Canyon methane leak, that there may be trace amounts of radiation coming out of that. So since that's been happening since October and is continuing to happen, anybody in Southern California or any practitioners you have in Southern California might want to be telling their friends and loved ones about this software just for them to observe, because when Fukushima happened and Sherry quickly came out with this software designed specifically for testing the radiation levels, I used it and used the nutritionals to counterbalance. So I'd take a vocal print of myself every morning. I'd see what was out of whack. I would take a nutrient to help balance that. I feel it really helped make a difference because it kept everything more so in balance. So that is really an issue, I believe, that's going to, you know, years from now, somebody will notice it in Southern California. But this methane leak has been happening at high pressure, and it's invisible, so nobody knew it was happening. But it's been happening since October and is ongoing.
So and it only took about a day for you to straighten up with nutrients, didn't it? When
yeah.
you were using that?
Yeah. And sometimes when something would flare up, I would take it, and then the next day or later that day or the next day, I would test myself again, and it would inevitably help reduce it or completely clear it. It was really quite amazing.
Well, what we want to do is catch it before it gets to the cellular level, because that's where it's causing some problems. The other thing that we wanted to announce is if there's anyone in or around this methane leak that wants to do a workshop for people who think they've been exposed, we very much would be interested in that and getting their vocal prints and providing frequencies that would help them get over this or looking at the nutrients of it. We need about 3 to 10 vocal prints before we can break the code of what's really poisoning someone or what the real relationship is. So we would welcome that if there's anybody there who is doing Okay, Richard, I'm done.
Okay. All right, I'm taking a deep breath because, as I told Sherry backstage, Sherry Jackson backstage, just saying the word letters IRS makes me kind of clammy. So this is a great show. Sherry Peel Jackson is a Christian author and speaker. She's also a retired certified public accountant, certified fraud examiner, and a former IRS agent. Sherry has over 30 years in public and private governmental accounting. She was thrust into the national spotlight for taking a stand against government theft and landed in federal prison for 3 years. She has a passion for delivering financial education and training people that are determined to take control of their financial future. Ms. Jackson conducts basic and advanced financial education seminars across the United States. She's also instructed financial survival courses for various associations, including private companies, government agencies, nonprofit organizations, and churches. Ms. Jackson resides in Stone Mountain, Georgia. She joins us today to talk with us about her book, How to Stick It to the IRS, Confessions from a Former Insider. Good morning, Sherry Peel.
Good morning, Richard.
I get clammy just reading it.
Oh, no. I'm there to teach people not to get clammy about it, like I said.
Thank you. That's what I'm looking for.
By the time
we get to the end of this show, I'd like to be not clammy. That would be, like, amazing.
Mm-hmm.
So I have to ask, what was your... Because I know it's a long story, but I know you're really good at bullet points. What was your journey that got you to the writing the How to Stick It to the IRS book?
That is a long story. Because of my journey, which, you know, the listeners can go and look up Sherry Peel Jackson and see all the trauma and drama that I went through, but knowing that we were being robbed by the banksters and the robber barons, and through the use of the IRS, I am the type of person that doesn't like injustice. I've been like that since I was a kid. And I had two choices, either shut up and know this for myself or to share it with people. And when I decided to start sharing the information concerning the misapplication and misrepresentation of the income tax back in 2000 or so, got with Joe Bannister, which is another former IRS Criminal Investigation Division agent, and John Turner and others, we just wanted to let people know that there was something wrong. And a lot of people came up to me and said, you know, I've heard this before, but it's different when it comes from somebody with 9 letters behind their names. So I've been writing and looking, and because of what I went through and because people wanted to know the story, and they want to know what to do. People want to know. They're wringing their hands. They don't know what to do. It's like Marvin Gaye wrote a song a long time ago called Make You Want to Holler, and he talked about the IRS in that song. People work hard every day. I know Richard, you, I, everybody else works very hard. And we want to be able to keep the fruit of our labor, not 50% of it, but 100% of it. And I believe even people would not mind helping out, quote unquote, by giving up 10% of it. But I have a poster in my office, and it's a picture, and at the top of it says slavery, and there are like 9 slaves in a cotton field, and one of them even has a baby. And at the bottom of it says, if stealing 100% of the product of someone's labor is slavery, at what percentage is it not slavery? So, Richard, it doesn't matter what color we are, green, black, white, blue, purple, polka dot, we're slaves in this economic system. People, number one, need to know that, and number two, they need to know the way out. And so that's what I speak about as I travel around the country, trying to help those who want to escape the rat race and stick it to the IRS at the same time.
Sherry, what was your experience with the IRS that was making you so mad?
Well, Sherry, it wasn't when I was at the IRS. I was an Internal Revenue agent from 1988 to 1995. When I started the IRS, I was just like most of the other IRS agents, thinking that they're helping their country and doing their, you know, civic duty. I did not leave the IRS because I found out about all the fraud and the theft. I left the IRS for family reasons. I'm one of those hardline Christians that believe that family comes first. And as I started moving up in rank at the IRS, I started having less and less time for my family. For example, at one point, I was offered a bribe by a contractor. And when you get offered a bribe, you have to get wired up and, you know, go undercover and all this other stuff. And, you know, that was kind of stressful. I couldn't tell my husband where I was going at night and, you know, picking up bribe money and all this. That kind of thing is not where I wanted to go. And I started to get convicted about the fact that I was, you know, giving them more of my time than my family. I would come home after arguing with high-powered attorneys and CPAs and have a headache, and I would slap peanut butter and jelly on bread for my children and give them milk, and they liked peanut butter and jelly, but I knew that that was wrong. I would go right upstairs and lay down with my head pounding, looking at the ceiling, saying, this is wrong, this is wrong. It was after I left in 95. I stayed home for a while to be June Cleaver. That didn't work out because I'm a busy type person. Started a CPA firm, and then people started to come tell me some of the things that they heard about the IRS, and I just kind of put it on the back burner. You know, some of these people believe that the IRS is stealing our money. But in 2000, things really started to break open on the Internet, and I started getting more and more feedback from people about the IRS. So Bob Schultz up in New York started the We the People Foundation for Constitutional Education, and he started putting ads out in the USA Today. And someone informed him about an ad that he put out in 2000, Dear We the People, the income tax is a fraud. And I read that article, then I got in touch with Jill Bannister and some others and started doing the research because I still had all the research, and I still have not found a law that requires most Americans that live and work in the 50 states to file an income tax return and pay an income tax. I have not found it. In Title 26, each and every one of those excise laws about who is responsible for the liquor tax, it spells it out. Who's responsible, how much it's supposed to be, and all that. There's nothing like that about the income tax. And also, the definition of income is nowhere in the Internal Revenue Code. The definition of income is in a Supreme Court case, and it's corporate profits. So when Walmart, and I'm downsizing these numbers, when Walmart makes $1 million, it gets to expense all of its utilities, its rent, its employee expenses and all that, and that $1 million, let's say, turns into $200,000, and they pay tax on that $200,000 profit out of $1 million. Well, what we're doing is we're doing an even exchange, because Richard, if I come and cut your grass, then I'm using my brains, my arms, and my legs in exchange for $100 for cutting your grass, and that's an even exchange. And that's the way I started looking at things. Also, the straw that really broke the camel's back is when I found out that the Federal Reserve is not federal. The Federal Reserve is no more federal than Federal Express, and they're collecting over $40 million in interest from the American people. So these wealthy families, the Rockefellers and Warburgs, Rothschilds, all those who made up the Federal Reserve, their children's children's children will never have to work a day in their lives while I have to work 12 to 16 hours just to make ends meet and get my family a decent vacation. And that was the straw that broke the camel's back that made me come out and speak.
And how do they – I've heard a number of experts talk about the Federal Reserve. It just – and every time I hear it, it blows my mind because it's just so hard to imagine that it's just – it's like a – I don't know what even to call it. I can't use any of those words on the air. It's such a bad lie. But yet it just is, it's like an agreed upon something, this false thing exists, and therefore this is how the rules get set. Am I having a wrong perception there?
No, you're not. Actually, Ed Griffin wrote a great book called The Creature from Jekyll Island, and it details how all these wealthy banksters went down to Jekyll Island, Georgia, and decided to make up the Federal Reserve and made it a nice name, Federal and then Reserve, which is not anywhere near what's going on with it. And basically the IRS are the bouncers for that club because they're the ones that are collecting the money. If you go online and look at the debt clock, you'll see that we're at, what, $19 trillion in debt. So I have a granddaughter that's 18 months old. She's already at least $107,000 in debt at 18 months old. So another thing is, if you go and online and look up America, Freedom to Fascism, that is a movie or a documentary that was produced by Aaron Russo. He made Trading Places with Eddie Murphy and the roles with Bette Midler. He put this documentary together, and it came out, I believe, 2006. And it features me and other former IRS agents, former FBI agent, Congressman Ron Paul, some constitutional attorneys, author Ed Griffin, and others explaining that this is a fraud, and they have several IRS high-up officials on there just stumbling over their words, none of them ever coming out and saying, here's where the law is. So if people want to really understand what's going on, that's where they can start. And I suggest that people do their own due diligence and decide what they want to do, because nobody's going to do it for you. And I'd rather people know about the system than not know, so that they can make informed decisions for themselves and their families, and not decisions that are based on lies and fraud.
Well, we've done Bernanke's vocal print, and we know that he's fibbing and withholding and not telling all the truth. a frog in my throat. An audience, several audience questions. One, why do you think people are afraid of the IRS? Is it just inconsistencies that they can do what they darn well please? Is it because they're withholding information about what we should or shouldn't be doing?
All of the above. Basically, people are afraid of the IRS because they threaten people with jail. They don't prosecute a lot of people, but the ones that they do prosecute, they make very, very high profile. In my particular case, it was interesting because they raided my home in 2004, and they stayed from 7:45 in the morning to 5 o'clock. They came in with a search warrant that said they were going to find four or five felonies. They didn't find any felonies. They found a homeschooling family that just wanted to keep what they earned. And between 2004 and 2007, they decided that because I was being so vocal, they still wanted to put me away and make me an example. So an indictment is when you file a case against for felony. They couldn't find a felony, so they brought me up on misdemeanor charges and filed what's called an information. So I was actually given a four-year sentence on a misdemeanor. There are people out there that rape people and shoot people that get shorter sentences than that. But it's okay for that. But when you're telling people what's going on with the money, then it's a big deal. So I did serve three of those 4 years. The only reason they let me out in 3 years is because they had to. I had 6 months good time, which means I didn't get in trouble in prison, and 6 months halfway house. So what happens is people are afraid of the IRS because they're afraid of prison. They're afraid of prison. And you know, I grew up in Detroit. My father tried to make us not be afraid of anything, and I wasn't afraid of prison. I was just disgusted that looking at the jury was so afraid to acquit me for fear of the IRS coming after them that I really didn't have a choice. I did not have a chance to win. Now, in Joe Bannister's case, he had a few thinking jurors on there, but the IRS, Joe Bannister was tried before me. They learned from their mistakes in his trial. They did not let my jury see the videos that had been produced. Joe's jury saw his videos and how sincere he was about the fact that he had done the research. Those were banned in my case. Mine were banned. So the jury didn't get a chance to see that, and I didn't have a few pop-ups that said, wait a minute, enough is enough. So that's what happens. People are fearful. I mean, there is something going on in our country, and I'm sure you guys talk about it, and health and finances go together. What I tell people is they're trying to kill us with the pharmaceuticals, and then they're trying to take all our money. So there's something called the cultural hypnotic societal mechanism that's going on. They're trying to keep us sick with all these pharmaceuticals and all these sugary foods, and, you know, with all these kids with diabetes. They're trying to keep us broke by taking our money with taxes. They're trying to keep us misinformed with all the lies about what's going on overseas and who's who. And they're trying to keep us fearful. Just like you said, the policeman was dressed up like he was guarding something in Iraq. This is not something that's random. This is all by design. So people are fearful because the media, the mainstream media wants them to be fearful because the people who own the mainstream media want them to be fearful, broke, sick, and misinformed.
Is your book, How to Stick It to the IRS, that I've tried to buy several times, by the way, online, and we talked about this morning, that something they may be sticking their nose into your book and what you're trying to sell. But does this talk about education and solutions so that we can quit being fearful? What does this really talk about?
It does, because I believe that I was in the IRS for a specific purpose, so that I would not be fearful of them. If you have your facts and you're educated, then your level of fear is reduced, and that's in any instance, as long as you have the education. So what I talk about mostly in the book is how to handle them when they come after you. You've got some decent people that have no idea what's going on. Then you have some tyrants in there. And because individuals and businesses are being audited because the country is broke and they're going after people and they're auditing, you know, people that have businesses. Now, they're not going to audit the person that, let's say, has a W-2 job and is making $50,000 and is having $5,000, $6,000, $7,000 taken out. That's a waste of their time because that person, you know, is okay as far as they're concerned, right up their alley. But the person that is trying to thrive instead of just surviving, the person who's decided to start a home-based business or some kind of a business online or whatever that has more than the W-2, those are the people that they're going after. And those are the people that, if they know what to do, if they're educated on how to handle the call, if they're educated even from the beginning on the red flags that cause an audit, then they're going to be less fearful, and then they're going to be more prepared to, you know, win the battle.
So you're really talking about how to, in a good way, be just ever so slightly under the radar of detection. You're not teaching people how to go to court, how to go to the IRS and say, you don't have the right to, this is a question. You're not showing them, okay, you don't have a right to my money. You're not really, you're aware of that, you're an educator about that, but really your book is about how to, like, just keep things smooth and even, and A, not get in their radar, and B, if you do, here's how to get your butt covered. Is that correct?
That's correct. Actually, I've been through that other battle of getting in their face and telling them they don't have the right to my money. And if I don't have the backing of the people of the United States of America, which I don't because they're fearful, then that will, you know, get me and other people landed in jail. Well, this is a mainstream book. This is for the people that say, she's probably right that they don't have the right to my money, but I'm just not going to risk myself or my family or anything like that, and I don't want to risk jail, or I don't want to risk them putting a levy on my house and taking my assets. So what I really need to know is, how do I combat them within the system? And yes, that's what the book teaches. It starts out with talking about the red flags that would cause an audit, and I'll give you at least one of those. One of those is, when preparing a tax return using round numbers, a lot of tax returns that I saw as an agent, when people use round numbers, 9 times out of 10 there's adjustments because that means they're guessing. So that's just something that you don't do. You know, even if you're trying to come up with a number and you think it's about right, don't use round numbers. If you don't have the exact number, please don't use round numbers, because that's a big red flag for the IRS. Another thing that I go very, very deeply into the book is for the business owners that have small businesses. I go through each and every line on what's called a Schedule C. That's the business portion of the income tax return, and tell them about the deduction and what not to do or what to do with that deduction, because there's certain red flags there. Like, they don't like you writing off a whole lot of entertainment expenses and things like that. And I tell them some good things also, like how to hire your children to work for you and not have to pay any tax on them.
Wow. And because we have an audience who are a lot of practitioners, I think that that conversation, that part of what you were just saying, is that I know that you're a fan of home-based businesses. And when we use that phrase, a lot of times I think people think, you know, MLMs or network marketed products. But talk to us about just the things that you were just starting to talk about, the real benefits of having a business in your home, why that is such a valuable asset.
Okay, so I have a home-based business, and let's pretend, Richard, that you don't. I can write off my cell phone, part of my cell phone. You can't. I can write off part of my internet. You can't. And for every 2 miles that I drive, if they're business-related, I can write off a dollar. You can't. So expenses that you already have, you can write some of them off if you have a home-based business. And if you don't have a home-based business, you're going to spend the money, and you can't. Just like with the children. You know, your children like nice shoes and nice clothes and all that. Make them work. And there's a way to do that. And for your children that are younger, you don't have the, between 6 and 18, you don't have to take out any federal, state, Social Security, anything. If your children are older, you know, you have to pay some, but at least, you know, you're getting the write-off for, you know, an employee. There are good things like that. And it's not just for home-based businesses. I say home-based businesses because a lot of people come home from work and they plop down in front of that electronic income reducer called the television, and they spend the rest of the night doing that, and that's just really, really unproductive. And I tell people to cut off the electronic income reducer or the electronic intellect reducer. Don't even turn it on. I have a television. I don't have a flat screen. I have an old television. I don't have cable. I have a Blu-ray DVD player. I watch documentaries on Netflix, and I watch educational DVDs. I don't have time for all that foolishness that they have on that thing. So people need to come home, decompress from work, and get started on their home-based business. They can write off just about everything but the kitchen sink. And to tell you the truth, there was a woman that went to court, I believe it was 1994, and her case, she won her case. What she did was she went to get plastic surgery to get her boobs up to like a 54 double D. And she said that that was an ordinary and necessary business expense, and the IRS said, oh, no, it's not. But she won because she was a pole dancer, okay? So if she can write off her breast enlargement, why are people afraid to go ahead and start home-based businesses and, you know, write off their cell phones and their mileage and all that? And I tell people how to do that correctly, writing off a space in your home. For instance, you have to have a designated spot just for that. If the IRS comes and asks you where your business is and you say your living room or your kitchen, you automatically just lost that deduction. So those are things that I teach in the book. But it's great to have a business. And for practitioners, even if they have a brick-and-mortar business, it's good. They just have to take extra precautions. I don't get much into it in the book, but I have these workshops that I do around the country that get more in detail. But for those that have a business, they need to structure them properly. They need to not own the building that they're in, not just for IRS purposes, but if someone wants to sue them. Because I know of a situation that where there were 10 doctors in one office, and one of them, you know, did something to a patient. Well, that patient sued all of them, because there was a perception that they were all in business together, even though they were just sharing space. And that was a horrendous thing that happened to the patient. And only one of the doctors survived that because he didn't have any assets in his name. All of them were in trust and corporations and LLCs. So there's a way to do that proper structuring if you have an outside business that you own. Don't have any of your assets in your name. So that's some of the things that I teach. That's not in the book. I didn't want to get too detailed in the book. I wanted to, you know, just let everybody know, hey, there's hope, and these are some of the things you could do. But for the detail, when I get into the seminars, I answer those questions concerning structuring.
Mm-hmm. I have a question from the audience. I'm not quite – I'll just read it to you. If there's no law that a W-2 worker must pay taxes, what law are they using to put people in jail?
There's not a law. There's a penalty statute that says if you don't do if you're liable. See, the problem is people liable, are people liable? When you work for a job, they're going to give you a W-2, or you're going to get a 1099 if you're self-employed, or you're going to get a K-1. All those forms are sworn affidavits that you received taxable income. So normally people do not fight these forms. There are people out there that rebut these forms. But if the company that you work for gives the IRS a W-2, which they do, they send it to the IRS and they send it to you, that's a sworn affidavit that you have taxable income. And if you don't rebut it, you have taxable income. And if you don't pay on it, then, you know, they're going to levy and take things. Actually, it's not the IRS that takes things. They get people to take things for them. They get your job to withhold more money. They'll get other companies to come and seize your assets. That's just what they do.
And what do people do that are workers that are cash workers, you know, that don't get a W-2, that don't get filed on, that are, you know, like I know a guy who's not a contractor, but, you know, a good wood butcher who comes in and does work, and if you pay him cash, he'll give you a discount. Or sometimes he just gets cash because he gets cash. So that means nothing's filed on that. Where does that fit into that?
The IRS has to prove income. You have to prove expenses. If there are these forms that get printed out on each Social Security number, and these forms at the end of the year have everything that was reported on you. So, for instance, let's take David. David has a W-2 job where he makes $40,000, and he also did landscaping for some corporations in the area. And because he's not a corporation, he received 1099 of $20,000. Well, on David's form at the IRS, it's going to have that you made $80,000. Now, David is going to put the W-2 on his tax return, and he's also going to put the $20,000 on the tax return, but he's going to have expenses to go against the $20,000, the lawnmowers, the repairs, and all that other stuff. Now, if David was also doing individual home lawn care and he made $20,000 in cash, if David doesn't put that on there, then there's nothing to show. And the only way that they could really catch up with David is if David went around bragging about the fact that he makes a whole bunch of extra money that he doesn't report, which when I was an IRS agent, people actually did that. And there is a 1-800 line where haters can call in on their neighbors and friends and associates and say, hey, this guy named David, he's got this big house down in Jump Off, Georgia, and he's running around telling people that he makes all this money. He just installed a new pool in his backyard, and he says he makes this money, and he doesn't report it. And so an IRS agent will go to David's house, not revealing the fact that that letter or that call came in, and do an audit on David, and sure enough, if David's assets and bank accounts reflected that he made $120,000, but David only put that $80,000 on his tax return, then not only is he going to get taxed on the 40, but he may be considered for criminal investigation.
Well, we've got some interesting things going on in the chat. Steve says there's an article, and he gives a link about the IRS is not a U.S. government agency, but rather a sham Puerto Rican trust. And, you know, our audience is all the time posting great and wonderful articles. But here is an oddball question. The IRS, the government, collects taxes from everyone every week from their paycheck. Where does that money go? Who gets the interest from it? And why shouldn't that interest be part of what the government owes us at the end of the year?
Okay. There is a Federal Reserve chairman. I think he's back from the 30s or 40s. His name is Beardsley Rummel. I think it's R-U-H-M-L. If you look up Beardsley Rummel, he wrote a treatise called Taxes for Revenue Are Obsolete. His article is not that long, but basically it says the taxes are a redistribution of wealth. So when you shell out $5,000 at the end of the year in taxes, it's not going towards fixing the roads because the gas tax pays for that. It's not going towards your policeman or your fire department because the real estate taxes pay for that. It's going to pay the Federal Reserve. For those that don't know, the Federal Reserve are the ones that are in charge of printing the money. It was supposed to be Congress, but they gave over that responsibility to the Federal Reserve back when all this stuff was going on with the creature from Jekyll Island in 1913. So when the Federal Reserve, through the U.S., you know, printing office, prints a sheet of $100 bills, it costs them about $2. But miraculously, the sheet of $100 bills turns into, let's say it's $10,000. And the United States government owes interest to the Federal Reserve for that. So the money all goes to the Federal Reserve. They are non-auditable private banking cartel. The president does not even get to select the chairman of the Federal Reserve. And Alan Greenspan used to tell the truth about things. You know, he used to talk about how gold was important, and everything has changed. So we don't get the funds. They steal the funds. That's what's happening. So the Federal Reserve is the one that gets all this money. And it's supposedly the interest that we owe them for printing the money. This whole big scam, they need to read The Creature from Jekyll Island. And there's another video series by Bill Steele, and it's called The Money Masters, I believe. That is it even goes back into England before they came over here, and how they devised these schemes to take everybody's money.
Okay, this is an audience follow-up question. If they take our money and get interest on it each week from our paycheck and then give us back the money at the end of the year, would you suggest that we just increase our deductions so that they don't get the money in the first place and just pay at the end of the year?
I don't tell people what to do. I tell people what I do. Now, when you get a large refund, I think that's sad because that means that you've given them an interest-free loan all year. A lot of people don't have discipline, and they're showing that. I've talked to people, and I said, look at your W-4. You have married 2. If you were to put that up to married 8 or 9, you will be getting back at least $300 or $400 every paycheck. And some of them will say, oh, no, because I need my big refund at the end of the year. And I said, why? And the lady said, that's what I used to go on vacation. We can get a very nice vacation for $5,000. And I look at her, and I realize that explaining to her that she could actually take that $400 every paycheck and put it into something to get her some interest, she would have more money. But I realized that she was not going to be disciplined enough to do that. So, yes, I'll explain to you what I did, and this is a revelation that I haven't told anybody. I don't have much taken out of my check at all. I'm single now. I have single 8. And that's only because I know that I have all these deductions from my business. So when I prepared the tax return last night, I owed federal a little, but I got a big refund from the state. So I put in filed for my refund to the state, and when that comes back, I'll pay the federal and I'll still have money left over. So if you put your exemptions, see, people have the false impression that the number of exemptions that they claim has to do with the amount of people in the household. So somebody that's married with 2 children is under the false impression a lot of times they have to put married 4. That's not the case. I never put any lower than 8, you know, all my life, simply because I knew that I was going to have enough deductions one way or the other. So they can go in and put as many exemptions as they want to get their money back during the year. Now, the only testy thing about that is they don't want to put those high exemptions if they didn't start a home-based business or they don't have deductions. They're going to have a bill at the end of the year that's not going to be very pretty.
Okay. I'm taking a deep breath. That's why I was silent for so long.
I have to
admit, I'm slightly less clammy now, so I'm happy. I have an audience question, kind of a gnarly audience question. I've not filed income tax returns for 10 years. I had cash jobs and was barely getting by. This past year, I returned to full-time work, and now I've received my W-2s. My coworkers seem to think that filing now after 10 years is going to get me fined or arrested or both. Now I'm concerned. Realistically, what will happen if I file my tax returns for the first, if I file my tax returns for this past tax year?
I can't say what's going to happen, but as long as they don't have any income on you, what can they do? If that little form that I talked about, that printout, if you don't have any 1099s and W-2s and all of that, see, they operate on dollars for hours. So even if you, within the last 10 years, received a 1099 for $5,000, that's not going to trigger them to go out because you have at least that much in exemptions, in your personal exemption and standard deduction. They normally, back when I was there, didn't audit anybody that made less than $45,000 anyway, because when they would go out there and the person either filed or didn't file, by the time they got all their deductions together, there was no money there. So they don't like to go out there and spend lots of hours and days and then come back with no money. So if there are no records out there on the person, then I don't think they have anything to worry about. Now, if you're running around not filing tax returns and you've got a W-2 or 1099s for $50,000 and $60,000, yeah, they're gonna eventually catch up with you.
Woo, yikes. Is there any way for us to get that same report? Is there anything that, or do we have to keep good records ourselves? I mean, this report that you refer to, is that something that is they're set up with those algorithms to have that data, or is that something we can actually see?
I don't know what they call the ones that we used to look at now, but they used to be called the IRPOL and the MDISA. But you can, through the Freedom of Information Act, ask for your transcripts. So file a FOIA, Freedom of Information Act, and you can look up online how to file a Freedom of Information Act with the IRS, and you can see there's a form you fill out. You have to put your name, your address, your slave surveillance number, I mean your Social Security number, and ask them for the tax return years that you want to see. And the printouts are very confusing, but you'll be able to see what they have you down as having earned in certain years. So the person that wanted to know, you know, were they going to be in trouble for not filing over the last 10 years, they could actually file a Freedom of Information Act to see if there are any records on them for those years.
And by doing that, is there going to be a flag suddenly? Are they going to go like, well, why do they want to know?
No, because there's so many thousands upon thousands of people that are filing these every day, and they're taking 6 to 8 months to even get them back because there's so many people that want to know. They want their transcripts because they want people to decipher their transcripts for them.
Okay, and that report acronym was IRPOL?
That's one of them, and the other one is AMDISSA. And I don't know. Though I'm talking about two different things. The IRPOL and the MDISA were reports that we received as IRS agents that were easier to read and spelled out, you worked at AT&T and you made $46,000. You received $900 in interest from Bank of America, those kinds of things. Those are those reports. But the transcript is more of a sort of a copy of your tax return and anything else that I would rather get the other two forms because they'll tell you what the IRS has on you. Both of them will. But the other one's easier to read if you could possibly get it. And I've been gone so long, I don't even know if they give them out or if they've changed the names. But you do want to see what they have on you.
Okay, I'm breathing a little shallow again, but I'll come back. I have an audience question. What about things like Bitcoin or virtual currencies? Do you think that, does that do something for us, or is that in your wheelhouse?
I am a fan of virtual currency just because, you know, they are for the people. But, you know, governments around the world are trying their best to crack down and regulate things. They like to regulate things. You know, if you find an herb that cures something or helps something, then they want to go out and patent it so they can get money on it. You all know that. Same thing with things like Bitcoin, and I think there's called One Coin or something like that. They are out there, and people are using them, and I think sometimes even when they get hacked, it may even be some kind of a governmental intervention in their hacking. But if you're, you know, I think at some point or another we're going to get back to bartering. I'm gonna be honest with you. For decades, our country has been kicking the can down the road. We have, at this point, unsustainable debt. There's no way that the money that comes in, even if they took 100% of our money, no way that it can pay the debt that we owe in treasuries to China and the Federal Reserve and all that. So this thing has become unsustainable. So a person that is a thinking person is going to ask themselves, what's about to happen within the next 1 to 5 years concerning the U.S. dollar, because if they've been paying attention, they know that the renminbi or the yuan, whatever you want to call it, the China, they're vying to be the world's reserve currency. And they've already been accepted in the little pool, and that was recently. So the dollar is on its deathbed. And I believe that people need to start looking at other forms of currency as a hedge of protection against what's about to happen. Bitcoin being one of those, gold and silver.
Right. And I know some people that are involved with the OneCoin group who have been, I'll just say, very happy with how that is working, because that OneCoin in particular, I have no vested interest. I'm not touting OneCoin. I just know people that are doing that. And they like it because it's been so far international. And, you know, they're able to get money other places without having to go through the standard channels where, in my world, when I hear the word regulate, that either means control, in my opinion, that either means control or find a way to make profit from. It seems
true
to be what regulations are about. The other thing I was going to mention is that also I know people that are doing bartering on really tremendous scales. You know, they you know, have organizations online where you can barter your wares. Like, you know, I haven't done it, but I keep having people suggest that I, you know, do shows for people and that I get bartered, you know. And it's like a pool. You get a pool of credits and then you can buy things. I know people that have had, you know, additions to their homes built on barter. So I'm a big fan of the concept of bartering. The fact that it's managed online seems a little tricky because anything that's online can be poked at, shall we say.
I am a big fan of bartering. Say that again, Sherry.
I said they'll find a way to tax bartering and garage sales. And, in Ohio, you must have a permit for a garage sale. And you cannot accept cash. You only have to use credit cards, so it can all be tracked. It's a mess.
Wow. That's deep. I am a fan of bartering. I actually used to be in a bartering club, I think, back in the late 80s. And that's when I was preparing tax returns. So I would prepare tax returns, and I prepared enough tax returns that I was able to get a hotel in Cancun on barter with the credits that I had earned. But you're right, Sherry. They already are taxing barter that's online. They have total control over that. They figure out how much the service was worth, and they expect you to pay taxes on that. Private barter, there's an Article 1, Section 10, I believe it is, the Constitution says we have the right to contract as long as we're not doing anything illegal. So I can make a contract with you, and you can make a contract with me, and that's bartering. And, you know, whether you want to make it somebody else's business, it's up to you. But we have to find creative ways to keep what we earn, because we are being taxed at 51% at this point between the federal, the state, the sales taxes, the estate taxes, the taxes that you pay on your telephone, all these other taxes, nobody really pays attention and adds them up. You know, but when I get my utility bill, there are all kind of crazy taxes on there. There's a 911 tax. There's all these taxes. So they're taking half of your money already. And working harder is going to make you wear your body out faster.
They're taking 64% of our income for our company here in Ohio and different kinds of taxes. I have a question from the audience, but it's going to lead us into our next show, because definitely from the responses here, some people said they bought your book while we're online here. But this is the audience question. Do you think taxes are a form of control of the people? No money equals stress equals depleted health equals no energy equals no fight against the leaders.
Exactly. That's what it is, and that's what that that treatise from Beardsley Rummel said. It's a redistribution of wealth. In 2008, September 29th, the stock market went down 777.68 points. Americans lost $10.2 trillion of their savings. This whole thing transferred over money from the middle class to the banksters. My father told me when I was about 14, and I didn't know what he was talking about. He said there will be no middle class. Well, a lot of countries that I visit, they don't have a middle class. They have well-off people, and they have the dirt, poor, broke people. And that's what we're getting right now. So we need to make some choices and some decisions. Yes, I believe the tax is to redistribute the wealth to the wealthy, because that's how the income tax came along at the same time that the Federal Reserve came along, and it was about control. It's about control. It's about controlling the media. The same people that control the media also are the ones who give millions of dollars to the colleges and control what you learn in the classroom. That's why me, as a CPA, did not know about the tax law, because they taught in my accounting courses, I had one tax course.
Wow. There is so much more to this that we need to know. Can we have you back ASAP?
Sure can.
George, one of our regular listeners, says, that was better than my cup of coffee. I'm wide awake now. When we bring Sherry back and we are looking at her official site, Sherry Peel, P-E-E-L, Jackson, .org. When we have her back, we're going to ask her to talk about the economy and how it affects health and how to grow your business. And Sherry, I understand you do workshops. Do you do personal consultations? Do you still do taxes?
I do not do taxes. I just don't want to help people feed the beast. I do personal consultations with people. I talk to them about that. They can get in touch with me at SherryPeelJackson.gmail.com. I'm sorry, SherryPeelJackson@gmail.com. The books are StickItToTheIRS.com. That's where that book is. My other book is How the Number Two Escaped the Rat Race.com. And I have a seminar coming up in Tampa, Florida, on the 21st of this month. And I'll be in Atlanta for February 27th and March 12th, and then I'll be in Chino Hills, California for two. That'll be April 2nd and April 8th. That information is at spjevents.com. That's S as in Sherry, P as in Peel, J as in Jackson, spjevents.com, registration for those three. I'm trying to get to at least two cities a month, and if people want to sponsor me, meaning find a place for me and help me fill the room, then I'm coming. I've got Dallas, I've got Queens, I've got DMV, which is the D.C. area, Houston, and Charlotte. We're working on those.
Well, I'm sure a lot of people from here are going to jump on the link that we put in your in the chat about buying your book and about income tax and looking at your site. And as the very first opening we have, again, we will have you back about stress, health, and money.
That's right, they're hand in glove.
Boy, howdy. I put a great link of all the stuff that I watched, there's a really great link on your stickittotheirs.com/welcome, and I put that link in both show notes, both at Blog Talk Radio and WebEx. And it's a really great video of Sherry talking about, you know, giving some bullet points and seeing her warm and friendly face, which is really, I'm still a little sweaty, but I'm way better than I was when we started.
Well, that's a great start.
Thank you. And that is, it's just a really great, like, no, look, you know, here's, you know, some ideas. And it's bullet points of great ideas of, you know, really welcoming, you know, clues and great things to, you know, do to, just get this under control. It's really nuts.
Right. Right. It is. We have to fight to keep what's ours.
And isn't that a sad state of affairs? But that's for the next show.
Yes.
Any other thoughts, Sherry, or we're moving toward the exit? I have the, because I know you have a class coming up.
Yes, that class, I don't know where, if you have any listeners in the Tampa area, but the next class is going to be very intense, and it's going to be the 21st of this month in Tampa. Then I have the 27th of this month in Atlanta, March 12th, Atlanta, April 2nd, Chino Hills, April 8th, Chino Hills. And if they go to spjevents.com, they can get all the details. My tax attorney, Mac McPherson, that got me out of IRS trouble as far as finances are concerned, is going to be speaking in the Chino Hills events. So that's going to be a pleasure for me to have him speak. And he's going to talk about, you know, the deep stuff like, you know, tax court and things like that. So it's going to be great. And they can look at that at spjevents.com. And I'll be glad to come back on the show because there's a lot to talk about concerning the economy and health, definitely. And I think it's not a conspiracy. It's a strategy that they put in place to keep us sick and broke.
Well, we've got your list of your events up online. We will have this edited and put up on our site and also on the Blog Talk Radio site. There's several other places that it's going to be. Richard, can you tell them about when it'll be up on Blog Talk?
It'll be up on Blog Talk in about probably 15 minutes after we stop the show. And then a little later this afternoon, it appears at iTunes, where you can go to iTunes and search in podcasts, and you'll search for Sherry Edwards, and all the shows we've done will be there. But that'll be there, as well as many of the podcast aggregators and its apps that are on whatever your phone is, like Pocket Casts, which is my favorite, or Stitcher, or any number of the podcast applications. It's going to be available. And I really recommend, I like using Stitcher or Pocket Casts, because I can easily send the podcast, the audio, and the show notes to somebody else. Because I think this is a show that a lot of people are going to hear and know that somebody calm and soothing like Sherry Peel Jackson is out there going, no, we can do this. Damn it.
That's right. That's right. We have to do it.
That's your next book. We have to do it. Okay. I'm still slightly sweaty. But this has been really awesome.
I feel so incredibly manipulated, and there is such a relief. I've been trying to get a hold of your book, but I will succeed in doing that.
Okay.
Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for having me on the show. It's been great.
I knew it was going to be, you know, I knew it was from all the material I watched and read about you, I knew it was going to be a good show. And it's such a, you know, I hate presenting in front of public. I'm happy to go on microphone and talk to tens of thousands of people, but I hate presenting in public. And I'm still at the point of where I'd rather present to the in the public than do sit down with the IRS. So I'm not quite there yet, but
wow.
I feel closer. Exactly. I feel the same way. Wow.
Well, we're going to get you there. We're going to get you there, Richard.
Thank you.
Here's just one comment from Madeline, and we'll close. Madeline says about you, Sherry, she is so courageous. She is a champion! So that's how people are feeling about the information you're sharing, and we do appreciate you.
Thank you. I always try to empower people.
Absolutely.
Richard, our time is up. We have to go.
It is.
I can tell we have to.
All right. I know. We could go on and on. Everybody have a great rest of the week. We'll see you on Tuesday, and we'll keep everybody notified when we have Sherry Jackson back again soon. Everybody have a great rest of the week. We will talk to you on Tuesday. Thanks, everybody. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Eastern.